Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
The first time I felt, you know, all these feelings, I didn't know how to put them into words, and that's when I did try and take my own life.
And without actually really powerful support from early on, it can arrive in these teenage years as a crisis, really.
We spoke a lot about possible reasons for me feeling like this. You know, adoption had come up and they sort of went, no, I don't think so. It's probably because, you know, you don't have a great social life. You don't do much with your life. And I was like, okay.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. I hope you're well. Thank you for downloading the podcast today. We're talking adoption on the programme today. Now, this certainly is a conversation that I've never heard before, and it's certainly a conversation I've never had before. We're looking at the mental health of young people who've been adopted. This is off the back of a new report from Adoption UK, their barometer report. And I was really struck by how serious some of the issues that young people who've been adopted face. Not because they are adopted, you know, often they're adopted into, you know, loving families who, you know, provide the world to these young people, but due to the complexities of being adopted, maybe with a trauma, violence or neglect experienced in earlier life, some of the complexities that come from, you know, being part of a family which isn't your birth family. You know, all of these things can have a profound impact on young people who are at a crucial point in their lives. You know, you think about your teenage years, trying to work out, you know, who you are, where you came from, where you're going. That's simple enough for non-adopted sort of peers. The results of this survey really let you know that actually the mental health of adopted young people and the support that their families need should be absolutely front and center when we look at mental health support for young people and when we talk through some of the issues that adopted children and adopted young people might be going through. So like I say, I've never had this conversation before, and I'm surprised if other people have heard this conversation before as well, because I think it's a really profound one. We'll hear from the report author, Becky Brooks. Becky's got a fantastic Lancastrian accent, not unlike my own, I might add. We'll also hear from Mimi as well. Now, Mimi was really generous with her time and was kind enough to share her story. She was adopted when she was 3 years of age, 17 years ago. She talks through her experience, and it's not that her, you know, her adoptive family didn't do everything for her, and she speaks very positively about her adopted family, but she also talks through this sense that as a growing up that maybe there was something a bit different about her in the place that she grew up and how she was different to other people and the profound impact that that had on her mental health. So Mimi's conversation will be part of this conversation. But first up, let's hear from Becky Brooks, the report author, talking through the findings and really laying bare the fact we've got to put the mental health of young people who've been adopted front and centre.
Honestly, it needs to begin before young people reach these teenage years and sometimes find themselves in these mental health crises. If you think about the experiences of an adopted young person, in the majority of cases, they will have been removed from their families because they will have experienced abuse and neglect. They will have, at that point, lost everything of their birth family, and they will have been taken from their homes, their comfort blanket, you know, all the things that a young infant needs to make them feel secure and safe. They will have been taken into foster care, which, although it should be a safe place, is obviously a big change, a dramatic life-changing alteration. Following that, there may be additional moves through the care system. Sometimes children will stay in more than one foster home before they reach permanence. There will have been a lot of court decisions and social work involvement. There's a process then by which they might move into their adoptive home. And again, this is another huge change and a huge difference. And for some children by that time, they've experienced so much loss and so many breakdowns in their relationships that it's not possible, it's very difficult for them to form those attachment bonds with the adoptive parents that they're going to be living with. So when we're talking about how we can support adopted young people, the support needs to begin at these earliest stages when a new family is being formed, in supporting prospective adoptive parents to ensure that they're in the best place and with the best training and information to be able to support the children that they're going to be adopting, but also providing whole family support from the earliest days. Because if we don't attend to these things in the earliest days, then what we see later on is a build-up of unaddressed issues, which really can come to the fore during adolescence. I mean, mean, for any young person, adolescence is a tumultuous time. We all remember our adolescence. We're struggling with our identity. We're trying to discover our independence. We're looking for our place in the world. There are a plethora of TV programs about people searching, you know, who do you think you are, and on online websites to find your ancestry. And it's completely normal that an adopted young person would have these same questions as any other teenager, but with this huge, incalculable, really, level of complication that you know, they are not living with the people who were their birth family. They may have had very little contact with them, apart from perhaps a few letters exchanged over all the intervening years. They may have to come to terms with very difficult and upsetting accounts of experiences that they had when they were very young. And without actually really powerful support from early on, it can arrive in these teenage years as a crisis, really. And then, of course, once that happens, adopted young people really need sensitive and expert support from professionals who really understand the particular nature of trauma, attachment difficulties, and identity difficulties that adopted young people face, which are not the same as other people. And what we found in the barometer report, both from adoptive parents who responded and from adopted young people and adults, was that the majority of them are struggling to find that kind of professional expert support. And so really it's something that's important to across the lifespan. Older adopted people told us that sometimes they'd come to their 30s and 40s and had begun to understand the impact of everything that had happened. But then when they went to try and find somebody who could support and help them through that, one person described it as looking for a needle in a haystack. They couldn't find professional support that really understood and could address the specific issues that an adopted person might be experiencing.
I mean, how much does this go into our general understanding or lack of understanding around almost what it is to be human, what it is to feel part of a family? Who am I? Where am I from? Where do I belong? Because, of course, if we were on top of all of those things, we would put the processes in place for those conversations not to take place in the 30s, but actually throughout the entire process as well. And when we talk about mental health, so often people are talking about their sense of their place within the world, and you can completely understand, given the experience of those adopted young people, that they might be thinking, well, where is home? Who are mum and dad, you know, who loves me, who really cares for me? You can understand why those thoughts and feelings are there.
Absolutely. And I think I mean, each adopted person will come to this in their own way and will have their own experiences and feelings about it. I'm not an adopted person and I really can't speak for adopted people. But listening to people and trying to understand what we're being told through surveys and interviews and just generally by reading people's blogs and books and social media posts, you really get a sense that there's been for a long time perhaps a misconception around adoption, that adoption is the end of the story. You know, that things have happened that are very sad and difficult in a child's early life, but adoption is kind of the cure for that. And once a child is adopted into a family that ought to be safe and loving, then that's really the end of the story, and it's happy ever after and roses and unicorns and, you know, everything's lovely from there on. But a legal order does not erase the past. So when we see that children have been through such a lot of adverse experiences, even though we can put them in a family where they will be looked after and cared for, none of what has happened to them is erased because of that. And it does need to be addressed at some point.
And in terms of the evidence, the report finds that evidence, 64% of adopted people aged 16 plus have sought support for their mental health. 46%, nearly half of adopted people aged 16 to 25 were involved in mental health services in 2020. That's in comparison to 17% of non-adopted here. So the evidence is very strong, isn't it? That, yes, that extra support needs to be there.
Yes, it is. And in fact, we're seeing an increase. This is the third year of the adoption barometer, and we're seeing an increase year on year in the proportion of 16 to 25 year olds are involved in mental health services. And we possibly expected a rise in 2020 just because of the general situation in the country with COVID-19 and all the particular challenges that young people have been through with examinations and social isolation and all of those things. But actually, we've seen this rise since before then. This is probably COVID-19 is probably implicated related, but it's not the whole reason. It's part of it. Now, there is an increasing level of support in some nations of the UK. So this is beginning to be recognised, the need for lifelong support for families. So in England, the Adoption Support Fund was introduced to provide funding for adopted children and young people to receive therapeutic support and services during their childhood. But this is not nationwide. So in Scotland, for instance, there's no similar scheme. So the organisation of this support and the funding for it is managed differently because it's a devolved situation for the different administrations to manage. And so in some senses, there's a kind of, I hate to use the phrase, but a postcode lottery. You know, it really depends where you live and what level of services you will be able to access. And of course, when we're talking about young people who are in their early 20s now, this kind of support wasn't available to them anywhere a few years ago. It hadn't been introduced yet. And so although changes are occurring and there is some improvement, which is really encouraging, there is a cohort of young people now who didn't receive that when they were younger and are still not receiving it now. And when we look at the policy and legislative framework for supporting adopted young people as they move towards adulthood, it's not really good in any nation. It's not really being addressed thoroughly in any nation in the United Kingdom. And so while there's a lot being done around the preparation for adoptive parents and recruitment and the what we call the front door of adoption, the early stages, really there's much less focus being put on what happens to these adopted children and young people through their lifespan. And really adoption is a lifelong thing. Once you've been adopted, you will always have been adopted and it never stops being an issue. It can potentially be an issue throughout the whole of the lifespan. And in lots of practical ways as well, think about trying to find out your medical information, think about trying to, you know, so even as people get older and they're trying to get, negotiate with doctors and they're trying to, you know, even not having a medical history becomes an issue. So on lots of different levels, this is an issue throughout the lifespan.
And with that in mind, given the sort of the trauma of those young people, maybe in their early lives and obviously everything they've gone through to find an adopted family, I guess the last thing you need at any point moving out through that period is cliff edges, if you like, where services just stop. And I know the survey looked at the issue of movement from child into adult services as well, and the need to smooth out those cracks, they're probably chasms, if you like, because as you've just described there, that young person doesn't need any more roadblocks in the way or cliff edges, metaphorically to fall off, because they've already sort of suffered almost enough in those early years as well. And it's quite clear in the report that those things need to be sorted.
Yes, one of the things Adoption UK is calling for is really an extension to adoption support services until at least the age of 26, until at least a young person passes 25. I mean, really, as I've said quite often to you, that, you know, the support is needed through the lifespan. But the situation where an adopted young person in some areas of the country at the age of 16 can be told that they can no longer access child and adolescent mental health services and must now try to see if they meet the threshold for adult mental health services is really unacceptable. It's difficult for any child or young person to go through that transition. But for children and young people who've experienced so much in their lives and who have such specific needs, having to then go to a group of adults, one of our case studies in the report described how they'd been taken off from CAMHS, children and adolescent mental health, and they'd met the threshold for adult mental health services, but what they were offered was a support group with 20 other adults in it, and they could not access that was not an appropriate level of support or a way to access support for a young person who was vulnerable, who was perhaps younger than their chronological age would suggest in terms of their ability to just be around that kind of environment. And in the end, they ended up not going and not receiving any help whatsoever and became totally disengaged with the professional services that were supposed to help them, much to the devastation of their parents and really compounding their own struggles. So arbitrary age cutoffs are a problem, but also we would love to see a discrete pathway, a multidisciplinary pathway for adopted young people. What we find is sometimes a conflict between those who are addressing issues surrounding attachment and trauma, and then others who are addressing issues surrounding things like a diagnosis of autistic spectrum disorder or ADHD. We find that these conditions are prevalent, highly prevalent in adopted young people. Also, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is highly prevalent in a care experience in adopted young people. And so adoptive families, when they're seeking support for their children and 88% of 16 to 25 year olds said that they view their parents as their main source of support. So we really are talking about as well what parents are having to do to get the support their children need. They're having to negotiate with many, many different services, health services, mental health services, education services, sometimes criminal justice services. So they're having to engage with lots of different services. It's not very well joined up. And it's a minefield. It can become a full-time job to try to access the support that your young person needs. But once the young person moves to independence, that falls onto them. And it is a huge barrier to accessing support. So a multidisciplinary pathway designed for care experienced and adopted young people, staffed by professionals with expertise in those areas, preferably with lived experience of those areas. This is what adopted adults were telling us they wanted. This would be, you know, ideal to smooth the way for adopted young people to access the support they need.
Right, so let's bring Mimi into the conversation. Mimi was adopted at the age of 3. She's now 20 years of age, and she joins us on the program. Mimi, thank you for your time.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Now, obviously, this is sort of lived experience for you. You know, this is your life as well. And I think maybe people have a presumption that if somebody is adopted, then that's almost the end of the story. That's the happy ending for the child. It's the happy ending for the family as well. And actually, this report makes it quite clear that there are some real complexities around it as well. Just tell us about your experience.
Yeah, definitely. So when I was born premature. I was then put into a care home out in Thailand. From my care home, I was fostered. And then from my foster home, I was adopted over to Wales. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, okay, so she's come to her forever home and so that's it. But, you know, a lot of people don't realise that adoption isn't just one event that happens in your life. It's an ongoing journey that we go on and, you know, we have to explore and find out more about ourselves. And for me, that was really hard because, you know, identity for me was, you know, very tricky, you know, being adopted from overseas. You know, I'm being brought into this family that I look nothing alike. You know, it's, you know, a completely different culture change for me as well. So, you know, as well as that early trauma in my life, you know, I was put into a place where I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't fit in. And, you know, that was always a struggle, you know, going through school. You know, there wasn't a lot of, you know, multicultural people in this area in general. I think me and my sister are the very few in our area. So it's sort of something I've grown up with and, you know, I don't have any issues with. However, there's always been that bit of, you know, when you go to these sporting groups or you go into these clubs and you are the only ethnic one there and it's really hard. And, you know, a lot of people meet my parents and it's very like, oh, these are your parents. And I'm like, yes, I'm adopted. And they're like, right, okay, because I think it's, you know, adoption is huge. You know, there's so many people in Wales and the UK who are adopted, but it's not spoken about freely. And, you know, I think, I don't know why, you know, I'm very open about my adoption. And, you know, for me, it's not that I can hide it anyway. You know, you do look at our family and think something's not right. So, you know, I think for people who, you know, are adopted from this country to a family, for them, it's very like, I can hide it a lot more, you know, I don't get those questions asked. And I think it needs to be spoken about a lot more, because I think this is where a lot of people struggle. For me, you know, it was hard just having all these feelings of, you know, not belonging, not knowing, you know, what group or category I fit in. And, you know, going through school and you do all your exams and, you know, you need a social life and you need to get a job and you know, you have plans for careers and stuff. I think that was very hard as well, you know, on top of, you know, not feeling like you belonged anywhere. And I think that's something I really struggled with. And I think, you know, I had a very happy childhood. You know, my parents are lovely people. You know, I get along with my sister. But I still had no, you know, reason in my life at the time to be feeling the way I did. And it started about when I was 15. So, you know, you're coming, you know, doing the exam, so you're really sort of getting a feel of who you are and what you want to do with your life. And I didn't have any clue of that, and I think I didn't know how to you know, how to put those feelings into words. I didn't know who I could go to. I didn't know, you know, you know, the stigma that was going to be behind it if I, you know, reached out for help. So that was very hard for me because, you know, I didn't want to tell my parents. I didn't want to put a blame on them. And the first time I felt, you know, all these feelings, I didn't know how to, you know, put them into words. And that's when I did try and take my own life. And when I was in hospital, you know, the CAMHS, the department, mental health department in our area, and they, I was adamant. I was like, no, I'm fine. I didn't know how to feel. I was like, honestly, it's fine. I don't want to be here. It was a complete accident. I didn't know what I was doing. So that was very hard to cover up. So I sort of went back, you know, sort of hiding it all. I didn't want people to know. It was, you know, something I didn't want to talk about. And then it wasn't until maybe 2 years after that had happened, I'd sort of dipped again. Again, I didn't know what these feelings were, but, you know, I was very strong-minded that I didn't want anyone to know. I didn't want to tell people. So I did leave sixth form because I just felt like I didn't have motivation for it. I just, I was like, I can't do this. I don't belong there. I feel out of place. I don't want to do sixth form. And it wasn't until my mother went, go to college, you know, this is probably the independence that you need and not being, you know, labeled or whatever. So I went to college and it was a completely different experience. You know, the Gore Simon College I went to anyway, there was a lot of multicultural people. Swansea do have a lot more people there. And in my class, there was another ethnic girl there. So that was nice for me to feel like, oh, great, I'm not the only, you know, Asian or Black one here. You know, there are other people like me. And it wasn't until my lecturers and my friends, you know, I dipped again after going to college, actually, which was, you know, just over a year ago. And it wasn't until they sort of noticed me, they were like, you need to go get help, you know, we want to support you. And that, you know, that was when I was like, right, you know, I'm 18 now, I need to do something about this because I can't, you know, when you have these strong suicidal thoughts, I didn't want to be put back in the position I was when I first, you know, started having these feelings. So that was something I was like, I think it's time for me to do this. And I, you know, I went to go and get help. I went to the GP. I was with the crisis team. I was with a mental health team. And, you know, we spoke a lot about, you know, the possible, you know, reasons for me feeling like this. And, you know, adoption had come up and they sort of went, no, I don't think so. It's, you know, it's probably because, you know, you don't have a great social life. You don't do much with your life. And I was like, okay. I was like, all you do is work. So I think you need to, you know, be more social, be more, you know, be more active and all that. And I was like, right, okay. So, I did do a lifestyle change and I was put on medication. And, you know, that sort of helped to an extent where I had a bit more motivation. I'd say I had a bit more energy. But, you know, going home at the end of the day, you can't do anything, but, you know, you hurt. And, you know, although you put this front on with when you're at work or when you're with your mates, you're like, life is great. When you go home and you just, you know, lie there in bed, you know, you can't do anything to stop any of the feelings you're feeling. And I think that was a big struggle. And, you know, at that point, it was only my friends and a few of my lecturers who actually knew about it. So I couldn't actually go to anyone at that point. And it wasn't until my youth support worker, Ruth, who is a part of the Adoption UK charity, and it was the Connect groups that she did, I started speaking to her. And, you know, I've known her since I was six. So, you know, I trust her. You know, I had built a relationship with her from a very young age. So I did, you know, she did reach out to me and was like, are you okay? And I was like, I don't know what I'm feeling. I can't, you know, there's no one to understand me. And, you know, she'd worked with a lot of young adopted people, so for me it was great to have her feedback and her knowledge of it. And that's when I got involved in the Connect groups, which is run by Adoption UK. And I'm still friends with a load of, you know, great young adopted people who've shared the same experiences as me. And, you know, talking to them about my struggle, I've gone, you've gone through this as well, you know, you understand what I mean, you understand what I'm going through, you understand that, you know, it's not just you or just anyone in general that it is, you know, possibly associated with my adoption and early trauma, because none of them, you know, we all work, we all had good friendship groups, we all, you know, had ambition and, you know, ambition and, you know, we wanted to do stuff with our lives. And they were like, you know, there's nothing in my life that made me feel like this. And I was like, that's exactly how I feel. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, had been adopted from young ages and all that. And, you know, they're still on their journey. A lot of them are, you know, finding out they have siblings and finding their birth parents, which is, you know, another hard subject to talk about. But, you know, we all had that thing in common. And it was great to be able to talk to them about my struggles and their struggles, because I was able to relate to them on the level that I needed. And that's sort of how I got here today. And, you know, I've been able to openly talk about it, you know, the last, you know, month or so. And it's been great, because I hadn't told my parents for 5 years and I had told them last month. And, you know, the support I've had has been absolutely amazing. And, you know, I wish I had had the support at the beginning, because, you know, maybe I wouldn't have had those suicidal thoughts. Maybe I wouldn't have, you know, tried to take my own life. It was, you know, something I wish I had known about sooner. And I think, you know, there needs to be more support out there for us, you know, from a younger age, when, you know, you're trying to explore your life and, you know, do well in school, and then you have all this, you know, as well as being adopted and trying to find who you are, because it's a struggle to be, you know, confident in who you are when you don't have a clue.
Absolutely. And you know, thank you for sort of sharing that journey with us, you know. And I think we don't want to put people off the idea of adoption or give people a sense from the reports and some of the findings that, you know, it sets people up on a path which might not be a positive one, because I'm sure there've been huge positives as well. But quite clearly, there needs to be significantly more knowledge around the mental health impacts and the way they may affect young people who've been adopted. Given the fact that when you raised those concerns and mentioned you were adopted, that was dismissed as not a factor and not an issue, whereas actually the report clearly shows now that can be a huge part of how a young person feels about sort of who they are, their sense of self, the sense of where they're from, and of course, then the sense of where they're potentially going as well. And also, you mentioned the idea of, you know, earlier intervention as well. The report calls for this 6-point plan, so that there are checks and balances all along the way, because it should never have got to the point where, you know, you were suicidal, because things presumably should have kicked in, or you'd have been trained, or your family will have been trained to spot those signs and to take a step forward. And it's a real hope now that we can get that training in place, so that families can get things in place, so that young people like yourself don't have to go through those sorts of experiences.
Yeah, definitely. Do you know what I mean? My adoption has been amazing. My parents are very supportive, very loving, and, you know, that's what, you know, an adoptee really needs in their life, because, you know, essentially we are given, you know, the second chance that we wouldn't have had. You know, we wouldn't have had the support or love or the opportunities we would have had, you know, possibilities with our birth family. So, you know, to be put into a family that are willing to give you everything that you need and more has been absolutely great. And I definitely found that within my adopted family. I definitely think, you know, there is a stigma that, you know, if we do speak up, you know, we're ungrateful or we're unhappy in our adoptive, you know, families. And, you know, that's not the case whatsoever. Like, my family have given me everything and more. You know, they've raised me to be independent and, you know, go for the things I want. But, you know, that's still, you know, my mental health struggle has nothing to do with the way they raised me or anything that they had done. You know, there was nothing on them to go, you know, this is the way, this is what you've done, and this is now why I'm struggling. It's nothing on them. And I think there's, you know, it's quite a taboo subject, and people don't want us to talk out because of it. And I think, you know, it needs to be more known that it's nothing to do with the adoptive parents. It's just something that's, you know, a part of our adoptive journey, and it's something that's, you know, gonna happen, you know, in one stage of our lives, whether that's, you know, early on and you show behavioral problems, or, you know, in your adolescence when you're struggling with your identity, or when you're, you know, grown woman and you have kids and you're thinking, can I give them what, you know, my parents gave me? Am I going to, you know, set a good example? So I think it's something that's going to definitely happen, you know, in young adopted people in their lives at one stage. It's just when it happens and, you know, making sure that there is support there for us.
Mimi, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for joining us part of the conversation. We really appreciate it. Let's bring Becky back into the conversation now. And I guess as well, when you look at those the families who open their doors and they open their hearts to these young people, they will obviously believe that they are doing absolutely the right thing, creating a home for someone who's had a particularly maybe difficult past. Absolutely. But at the same time, we have to have a system in place where it's a fair system to them, that they have the skills or at least the knowledge of a pathway that they can seek if that child is expressing suicidal thoughts or thoughts of self-harm, depression, anxiety. That family needs to know what those opportunities are for them so they can take appropriate steps, presumably.
Sure, and I've been a foster carer and I'm also an adoptive parent myself. And I know that, you know, the majority of adoptive parents, they adopt because, you know, they want to have a family. It's a natural thing a lot of people do. And then there are some who adopt perhaps with other, you know, with this idea that perhaps they, rather than having birth children, you know, they could give a home to a child that really needs a home. There are a lot of different motivations for people to adopt. I think that's really important to express, because I think there's a concern that if we talk to people who are interested in adoption and tell them some of the challenges and difficulties that are inherent in adoption, that it might put them off and that would be a terrible thing. We mustn't do that. But what we really do then is we set people up for future failure. Because if people don't know about this stuff, and people don't prepare, and people don't do the reading and go on the training and get themselves and speak to adopted people, speak to adopted adults, and talk to them about the experience of being adopted, then really it comes as a shock later on. What's going to happen will still happen, whether you were prepared for it or told about it or not. And then you're going from a standing start, trying to find the support and the help that you need. And it does nobody any favours. And most of all, it doesn't do the children any favours. Adoption, any kind of permanence planning, should be about finding a home and a family for a child, not finding children for parents, you know? And so if we're going to put the children at the heart of the process, then it's only fair on the children if we are completely honest and upfront with any prospective adopter, prospective guardian, prospective kinship carer, anybody who's doing this. It is only fair on the child if we're upfront from the beginning about some of the challenges that might be faced, but accompany that with, and this is how we will be there to support you throughout the whole of your family's lifespan together. It's not frightening to people if it's accompanied with assurances of solid, flexible, timely and expert support. And that's how it needs to be framed to people.
The Adoption Barometer report sets out the evidence. It also sets out the 6-point plan as well to fix some of those issues, and we've touched on it as part of this conversation. Where does that go next? Is this about a government taking action now? Is this about conversations in Westminster? What are those next steps now that turn some of the things we've talked about into positive action?
Well, the Adoption Barometer is in its third year now, and really it's beginning to be anticipated by those who walk in the corridors of power. They know that it's coming, they know the kinds of things it's going to be saying, and they know that it's going to be challenging. We've already presented this to the governments in all nations of the UK, actually. There have been meetings with the DfE and various people. And then there are other sector leaders that we also bring in to talk to them about the results and what we found. So for in England, for example, that might include the Regional Adoption Agency Leadership Board. And that's adoption is largely managed now through these regional adoption agencies, large agencies that cover a large geographical area. And actually, some of this is legislative change that's needed. For instance, in Northern Ireland, there is the Adoption and Children Bill going through the Assembly right now, which hopefully will bring a much needed update to legislation in Northern Ireland that's from the 1980s. But some of this can be done at a more local and regional level, and where the regional adoption agency leaders in England are able to talk together and share best practice and are informed by what we're able to tell them from the Adoption Barometer, we can see local level changes making a difference for adoptive families. Some of this is about legislation, but in some areas the legislation is there. It's how the legislation's being implemented to make it have the best impact for adoptive families, and that comes down to local level changes.
Becky, thank you for your time today. Best of luck as those sort of conversations take place as well. It seems like a really important set of conversations as well. I look forward to reading on the report for 2022. Let's hope we're looking at some positive changes in the next year or so. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.